Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we cut through the noise to bring you those crucial nuggets of insight. Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're plunging into a work that, well, it was written decades ago, but it speaks so profoundly to anyone striving for a significant goal. Cyril Connolly's Enemies of Promise. We've gathered a stack of articles, critical analyses, our own notes, you know, to really try and illuminate its enduring wisdom. Our mission today is basically to uncover not just what prevents creative greatness, but maybe more importantly, why it matters for all of us. Whether you're an artist, an entrepreneur, or just, you know, trying to achieve something meaningful in your life, we'll explore some surprising paradoxes like how success can actually be as dangerous as failure, and what that famous phrase, a pram in the hall, really tells us about ambition.
And what's truly compelling about this deep dive for you is that Connolly's work, it really transcends mere literary history. It's more like a timeless diagnostic manual almost.
Yeah.
It helps us understand why immense initial talent, or promise, as he called it, so often doesn't quite reach its full potential. It gives us a framework, really, for identifying the silent saboteurs in our own lives. A reflection that resonates, I think, far beyond the, you know, the literary circles of his time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Cyril Vernon Connolly, he was born in 1903, passed away in 1974, an absolute cornerstone of British literary life. He founded Horizon, which was this incredibly influential literary magazine back in the 40s, really shaped a whole generation of writers and thinkers. His background was, well, quite privileged, Eton and Oxford, a respected critic. But what makes him uniquely qualified to write Enemies of Promise is something much more personal. He was, by his own admission, a man profoundly haunted by his own perceived failures. As a creative writer, I mean. So this isn't just theory for him. It's a deeply personal struggle. And that lends the book this incredible honesty. It's almost confessional. He was really dissecting his own condition.
It's quite striking, isn't it, that he wasn't just sort of theorizing in a vacuum. He was actually, you know, intimately connected to figures who had become literary giants like George Orwell, Evelyn Waugh. How do you think observing their struggles and maybe their triumphs, too, firsthand influenced his understanding of these enemies?
Oh, hugely. It absolutely imbued his observations with this rare kind of authority.
Yeah.
He saw it up close, you know, how talent either flourished or faltered among his peers. He witnessed the choices they made, the sacrifices, the compromises, the diversions, all of it, and how those choices played out over time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it wasn't just academic speculation. It was lived experience filtered through, well, a highly perceptive and, let's be honest, often pretty self-critical mind. He saw the temptations, the traps.
Okay, so with all that context, what's the core question Connolly is really wrestling with here in Enemies of Promise? What's the big dilemma?
At its heart, the book tackles this question that seems simple, but is actually profoundly complex. Why do so many really talented individuals fail to fulfill their early promise? You know, fail to produce truly lasting, monumental work. He frames it as a kind of war of attrition. It's not just about having raw talent. Lots of people have that. It's a battle against this whole constellation of forces, some external, like societal pressures, practical demands, and others internal. Psychological traps, personal habits, things that just systematically undermine potential.
Right. And connecting this to the bigger picture for you, our listener, I mean, this isn't just for aspiring novelists, is it?
No, not at all.
Whether you're an entrepreneur launching something new or an academic in that publish or perish cycle or really pursuing any long-term creative project, Connolly's insights, they just feel incredibly relevant. They illuminate these universal challenges, don't they? Trying to bring significant work into the world.
Exactly. Universal challenges.
So Connolly meticulously catalogs these enemies, and some are quite surprising. Let's start with one that, well, it feels counterintuitive. Journalism. How can something like journalism, it gives you income, an audience, how can that become an enemy of great writing?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Connolly famously called journalism a sweet poison. Sweet because, well, it offers immediate rewards, right? A paycheck, deadlines, seeing your name in print, gratification. But it's poison because it trains writers for immediacy, for commercial appeal, for quick, often disposable prose. You can imagine a writer constantly chasing trends, churning out articles for clicks, that rapid-fire output. While maybe you're paying the bills, it can gradually erode sensitivity to language, patience for deep research.
That commitment to exploring complex truths.
Exactly. It's a trade-off. Short-term gain, maybe, for long-term artistic loss. It diverts energy from what he called the deeper, slower work needed for lasting literature. And similarly, he talks about politics too, how intense political engagement, while noble, can also divert energy from that patient, often ambiguous work of artistic creation. Politics demands immediate relevance, partisan clarity.
Which is often the opposite of lasting art, right?
Often, yeah. It could be antithetical to the ambiguity, the universality that makes art endure.
Okay, this brings up another point. It seems so contradictory that we celebrate success, we dread failure, yet Connolly says both can be enemies. How does that work? It's confusing, isn't it?
It really is one of his most insightful paradoxes. And it says so much about, the human condition. Success, it brings its own enemies, big ones, distractions, social obligations, pressure to maintain a certain lifestyle, and maybe worst of all, the temptation to just repeat the winning formula.
Right. The thing that brought you acclaim in the first place.
Yeah. You get trapped by your own achievement. You're looking over your shoulder, not innovating. But then failure is just as destructive, obviously. It leads to bitterness, crippling self-doubt, and often just abandoning the ambition altogether. Why try again, right?
So either way, that initial promise can just fizzle out based on how we react.
Exactly. It's about the response to the outcome.
And then there's Connolly's most famous image, maybe the most provocative. The pram in the hall is the enemy of art.
What exactly was he getting at there? Why does that phrase still hit so hard?
The pram in the hall.
Yeah.
It's such a powerful, almost brutal symbol. It represents not just children specifically, but the whole weight of domestic responsibility. Marriage, mortgages, the daily grind, the constant unpredictable demands of family life, all of it. These things consume huge amounts of time, energy, and crucially, that quiet mental space you need for deep creative work.
That headspace, exactly. It highlights this profound tension between art and life. The artist, he argued, needs a certain degree of sacred selfishness, a detachment that's often fundamentally at odds with conventional domesticity, the mental load of family, that constant need to be present. It can starve the very solitude and freedom the artist needs.
Makes sense. And he talks about internal enemies too, right? Like procrastination.
Oh, yeah. Sloth, self-sabotage, procrastination is a big one.
Yeah.
That paralyzing fear of imperfection.
Yeah.
And the tendency to substitute busy work, writing endless letters or reviews for the harder, more vulnerable task of actually creating something original.
That feels very familiar.
Doesn't it? And then there's another subtle one. Perfect taste. He suggests that having too much refinement and impossible high critical standard can actually paralyze you. Writers become so critical of their own work, they can't produce anything that meets their own elevated standards, so they end up sterile. All taste, no output.
Yeah.
Trapped by idealism.
Wow. And Connolly doesn't just theorize, does he? He uses himself as a case study, especially in that autobiographical part, A Georgian Boyhood. He really puts himself under the microscope.
Absolutely. His personal journey is crucial for understanding his theories. Mm. He talks about his elite education, Eton, Oxford, which, yeah, it nurtured his literary sophistication, but it also instilled these unrealistic expectations. It fostered this sense of superiority that could, ironically, be counterproductive, and this paralyzing fear of not living up to his own potential.
So his own struggles, his perceived creative block, became the evidence for his theories.
In many ways, yes. He felt trapped by his upbringing, by the ghost of what he felt he should have become.
What's particularly striking for me, thinking about Connolly's story, is the contrast with his contemporary George Orwell. You mentioned him earlier. How did Orwell manage to navigate these same enemies so differently?
Orwell is such a fascinating foil here. Because while Connolly seemed to absorb a lot of the establishment's values and felt constrained by them, Orwell consciously rejected them. He rejected the system's trappings, its expectations. He really forged his own path, often embracing discomfort, challenging the status quo. He kept his artistic integrity by connecting directly with reality, with the struggles of ordinary people, often at great personal cost, mind you.
Right.
And that's such a stark contrast to Connolly's more aesthetic, more self-critical journey. Connolly was maybe too consumed by this internal battle for perfection, whereas Orwell was focused more on external engagement, on impact.
Orwell went out into the world. Connolly retreated inward. Is that fair?
I think that's a pretty fair summary, yeah.
Okay, it sounds like a rather bleak picture Connolly paints with all these enemies lurking around. Does he offer any hope, any strategies for the aspiring creator to actually overcome them? Or are we just doomed if we have a pram in the hall or, write for a living?
Well, his outlook could be quite pessimistic, it's true. But he did propose strategies, though they often demand immense discipline, it has to be said. He talked about cultivating the long view, a relentless focus on lasting achievement, not immediate gratification. This often required what he called monastic dedication, sometimes even geographical isolation, you know, getting away from the distracting literary and social scene. Mm-hmm. And as we touched on, that idea of sacred selfishness, rigorously prioritizing the artistic work over social obligations, over the endless demands of life.
Okay, so sacred selfishness.
Yeah, but it's important to clarify, I think. This isn't about abandoning life entirely or becoming corrupt, but not necessarily. It's more about consciously making choices, setting boundaries, rigorously protecting creative energy and time, recognizing their finite resources. They have to be guarded fiercely if you hope to achieve something really significant. It's about conscious prioritization, deliberate allocation of your most valuable stuff, your time, and your focus.
Okay, so let's bring this home for you, the listener. What are the core messages from Connolly that we can really apply to our own lives, our own ambitions today, whether that's writing a book or, I don't know, building a business?
I think several core messages really stand out far beyond just literature. First, pretty clearly, talent isn't enough. It's fragile. It needs active defense against pressures, both internal and external. Second, understand the war between art and life, that constant tension between the demands of deep, focused work and the necessities of just everyday living. It's real. Third, beware the tyranny of the immediate. Think about modern life, social media content, chasing quick wins, short-term projects. These can absolutely drain the wellspring needed for bigger, lasting work, just like journalism did in his day.
The modern equivalent of that sweet poison.
Exactly. And finally, maybe most importantly, self-awareness. That's your first line of defense. You have to identify your specific enemies. Is it your job, your habits, your social scene, your own psychology?
Yeah, that self-awareness piece feels key. And this wisdom, it applies everywhere, doesn't it? Entrepreneurs juggling short-term revenue versus long-term vision. Academics facing publish or perish, having to choose between quick papers or that deep, maybe slower research, or really anyone trying to achieve something difficult and meaningful while balancing life's relentless demands. Connolly gives us this powerful framework to understand what might be quietly sabotaging us, often from within.
Couldn't agree more.
So if Connolly teaches us that even our strengths, our ability to connect, our desire for security, our social instincts, or even the parts of life we cherish most can paradoxically be enemies of promise, then maybe the real question isn't just what we need to add to achieve our goals. Instead, perhaps it's about what we need to bravely, maybe even a bit selfishly, shed or fiercely protect ourselves from to truly unlock our deepest, most lasting potential. Something to think about.
A powerful thought to end on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.